The topic for tonight is the subject that's uppermost in the minds of the rulers of this country. It is the question of black liberation, the question of black people getting their freedom. That's the key issue that is shaking up the white capitalist power structure in this country. Before going into the present day developments, I believe it's necessary to sort of examine the evolution of this process that we see unfolding today. You will note in the title, From Civil Rights to Black Liberation. Now, everyone has either read about, have heard about the civil rights movement, and they have read about or heard about black power. While on the one hand it appears as two distinct movements within the black struggle, and they are in that they represent two roads to achieve freedom. But when we think in terms of the development, it is in historical terms, of development of the consciousness of a people, we see this as two stages in the development of the struggle of black people for their liberation. And I say that because as we look at some of the proponents of black power, we are aware that they came out of the civil rights movement, such as Stokely Carmichael, Rap Brown, and several others. Now, when we speak of the civil rights movement, I think we should give credit to what it accomplished. And I'm not raising here the question of the tactics that were used, not even raising the question whether I agree or disagree, because they were there, they did what they felt was necessary, but I'm viewing it from the point of view of history, to where for many, many years people believe that black people were free, because we have been taught in school that since the signing of the Emancipation Proclamation that black people were free. The role played by the civil rights movement demonstrated beyond a shadow of a doubt that black people are not free. And when they strive to just exercise their democratic rights as a citizen in this land, they can be beaten, jailed, killed in this so-called land of the free and home of the brave. So when we speak of the civil rights movement, I would rather view it as the civil rights era, which began with the Montgomery bus boycott in 1955 and ended with the assassin's bullet in Memphis, Tennessee in 1968. Because with the murder of Dr. King, it marked the end to the civil rights era. Now, once again, if we look back in historical terms, we see how a phenomena come into existence. It arises out of necessity. It arises out of a given need. Struggles to maintain itself, reaches a peak. Then it began its decline. but in the process of reaching its peak, creates those elements within it which will replace it. Now we see this within the civil rights movement. When we see its highest achievements was the march in Washington. And I'm viewing it here from the point of view of the amount of people that turned out. I'm ignoring for the time being how it was high buying and, you know, everything was supposed to be pure. Nobody saying nothing, you know, contrary, because after all, the powers that be were there and everybody who's supposed to count was there. And don't say nothing dirty about nobody, this kind of a thing. But from the point of view of the turnout in and of itself, it was massive. But at that massive demonstration, we saw the beginning of a change in the thinking of black people. Now I'm referring specifically to the censored speech of John Lewis from SNCC, which began a new process within the civil rights movement. Whereas many of the blacks who had gone through this whole process of nonviolent demonstrations began to realize that black people must develop their own leaders, which began the whole process of a rise in black nationalism, which is it means black people coming into their own. And within the civil rights movement, like everywhere else, of course, it was criticized. Many of the white liberals were critical because after all they had done for the Negro, they were rejecting them. But I would rather view it this way. There were some whites who went down and participated in the demonstrations, and some were killed and beaten in jail and so forth. But it seems to me that rather than rejecting the notion of the idea that black people recognize that they must develop their own leadership, rather than feeling isolated and rejecting this concept, they should have hailed it. Because what the black people are beginning to do, what were beginning to do then and are doing now, is what every people in the history of the struggle of mankind for survival has done. That is, any people who want to be free must organize themselves as a people, develop their own organization, their own program, their own leadership, and carry out their own strategy and tactics. Every people who have achieved their freedom have organized themselves, have developed their own leadership, have worked out their own strategy and tactics. Yet, when black people proceed to do it, it's wrong. That is in the minds of the power structure in this country, and in the minds of many of the brainwashed Negroes in this country. They adhere to the old belief, one, that black people don't stick together, that black people must always be led by somebody else, that black people cannot organize. And those who believe this, of course, they're believing what they have been taught, but they are ignoring their own history. I mean, that history that is not taught in their high schools, that is not taught in the colleges, that part of history which is denied black people, which goes back to the days of slavery, where black people organized, the runaway slaves, where black people threw up leaders like Nat Turner, Frederick Douglass, and many, many others. And to take a more recent example, take the Montgomery bus boycott. In this area in Montgomery, Alabama, the entire black community stood as one for over a year. They had one organization which spoke for the entire black community. Although the issue that sparked him, of course, was to break down the segregation in bus riding buses in Montgomery. And in the course of the struggle, in order to get black people back and forth to their jobs, they organized a better transportation system than the one they were fighting against, trying to desegregate. They had one organization which represented the entire black community. And this organization embodied everybody in that community, including the ministers. And the real architect of that movement recognized that the ministers are important to a movement as long as you are able to control the ministers. They became the spokesman to go out, get the money, publicize the movement. So as a concession to the ministers, so that they wouldn't violate their robes or whatever it is that they believe in, they called it passive resistance. But for those of you who haven't read about it, I think it would be good if you would, you'll find that it wasn't passive in the sense that we think of nonviolence. Nonviolence being where people make a principle out of being beaten up. If that were the case, then explain to me why in Montgomery, Alabama, the cradle of the Confederacy, during that whole period, there were no beatings, no jailings, no killings during the whole period of that struggle. There was one attempt to bomb Dr. King's house while I was down there. And I say one attempt because some of these brave people in white sheets drove up in their car. He got out here and he dropped a bomb there, and Dr. King's house is way over there, you know, this kind of thing. A delegation was sent to the police station, and these were young men, these young GIs. Most of them hadn't been out in the army too long, and they, you know, they knew what the score was, and they knew what had to be done. They weren't the ones you saw sitting in the churches and the prayer meetings. They were the ones who were repairing the cars around the clock. They were the ones who were escorting black people back and forth to their jobs around the clock. They were the ones who were hanging out in the pool rooms. Yet they were the ones who were defending the homes of the leaders of that movement. They sent a delegation down there, told the authorities, and now look. So now we're right in what we're doing. Now, we understand they tried to bomb Dr. King's house. Now, we want to tell you one thing. We also hear you trying, the Klan is planning to bomb Mr. Nixon's home. For those of you who don't know, Mr. Nixon was the architect of that movement. He's the man who envisaged it. He's the one who organized it from the beginning. So they told him, says if you drop another bomb in Montgomery, this whole town is going to hell. And they backed it up. When I got there that later on that night, I found out that there was an army base not too far from there. And that night, around Mr. Nixon's home, there were some of the largest machine guns. All kind. It must have been about 120, 140 men with new modern automatic weapons right out of the arsenal from the army base, with floodlights around the whole area, so if anybody hit in there, they automatically hit into a crossfire, no matter what spot they hit. They didn't kid. And this is why the development of the struggle in Montgomery was different than any other that took place in the South until the Deacons for Justice and Freedom hit the scene. Now, this, of course, has been subordinated to this whole struggle for integration and nonviolence. But as I mentioned earlier, it played a role in demonstrating to the world that this country is unjust, that black people are denied their rights as human beings. It's also played a role in teaching black people that they had to develop their own leadership, build their own organizations, and lead their own struggles. So that when the sentiment was reflected in John Lewis, then within others within SNCC, that is within the civil rights movement. Outside the civil rights movement, one of the first organizations to hit on the scene, not hit on the scene, but began to express racial pride was the Nation of Islam, for which Malcolm X was a spokesman for, who began to project the ideas of black nationalism. It began to have an effect both within the civil rights movement and among black people throughout this nation. And that movement has been growing ever since. Now here too, taking these two movements, when we think of two symbols or two individuals which reflected these movements, we take Martin Luther King as the symbol of the civil rights movement and Malcolm X as the symbol of the movement of black nationalism. Here too is a very important lesson to be learned, that this nation is opposed to anyone who speaks out against injustice, whether you are for nonviolence or not. Now, from the point of view of Dr. King, you will note it was after he came out against the war in Vietnam, he began to run into all kinds of trouble from the liberals. That the civil rights movement began to waver, and there were all kinds of signs that it was beginning to make a turn of some kind. And then to add fuel to the fire, when Dr. King began to think in terms of going into the union movement and supporting black workers, sanitation workers in Memphis, Tennessee. Malcolm X was silenced because he spoke out against this system, against this injustice, and he sought to break the thinking of blacks out of the narrow confines of being a minority within this country. He sought to point out to black people in this country, numerically, they are a minority in this country, yet throughout the world, blacks and non-whites are in a majority. And that the black people in this country are a part of that international struggle for human rights that are taking place throughout the world. And that the black struggle here in this country is part and parcel of it. That the black struggle here is against the racial oppression of the white capitalist rulers of this country, as well as their cohorts in other parts of the world who are struggling to keep black people and non-whites down and exploit them. This constitutes a danger to the rulers of this country. So both were assassinated because they pose a threat to the establishment. Now there's just this difference. As I mentioned earlier, the assassination of Dr. King marked an end to the civil rights era in this country. The assassination of Malcolm X began an acceleration of black nationalism in this country and began to cause black people to identify with themselves more and more than they had at any other time. That is, since the Garvey movement. And I could see this reflected throughout the country, because I toured the country in 1962, 63, and 64. And during 1960, in all 3 years, in visiting, I visited more than 1,000 campuses. Over that span of time, from coast to coast, from Maine to California, from Mexico to Canada, there were very few Afro-American groups of any kind on any campus. There were a few, but not very many. Now, if we contrast that with today, you will find very few campuses that do not have some kind of an Afro-American group. What I found to be the case, that on many campuses, blacks didn't want to associate with each other. And when you talk about that getting, that was out of the question. They didn't have time. They didn't want to be bothered with, you know, all that sort of mess. That's not the case today. not the case because the black youth of today or now generation, they want their freedom right now. They wanted it, you know, they want it like 8, 10, 50 years ago. They're doing something about it now. And in the recent period, I've been speaking at a number of campuses. A lot of the faculty members have been very critical of the activities of young people. Some of them say, well, don't you think that these black students are alienating themselves by carrying on all this kind of activity? I told him, hell no. Because what the black students are doing today, what all of the students are doing today, is what had the older generation did, then the struggle for freedom would be much further ahead. So I say to any old fossil who's critical, you didn't do what you should have done, so now you either get in or shut up. Because what they are demanding is just. They're not demanding anything that's unreasonable. They are saying to every educational institution that black people helped to build this land. Black people have been denied their culture. They've been denied their history. And how in the hell can you talk about American history and exclude the role played by blacks in this country? It's a falsification of history to justify white supremacy in this capitalist land. Because it's important for black people to know their history, to know their culture. To do this, they will take pride in themselves. They will feel proud of their history, and it's a rich history. They have a very rich heritage. There are many great black leaders who have helped to make this land great. The young people are seeking the truth. They're entitled to it, and they're going to get it. And I think anybody who disagrees with it, you're living in the past. So now you better get with it, or you better find someplace else to go. Because the time has come when black people are beginning to do a little thinking. You go back and you read any part of American history, you will not find in any of the history books, when you read about any war that America's been in, you won't find in any history book the role played by blacks. Yet every war that this land has participated in, blacks have played a role in it. And an important role. They have been on the firing line consistently to defend a democracy thousands of miles away where they can't live like a human being in this land. And young people are tired of it. And they got a right to be tired of it. Because they're the ones who are dying in Vietnam. They're the ones who are dying in Korea. They're the ones who are dying during World War II. They're always the ones who are called upon to die for a so-called democracy. The point being that blacks are good enough to die or kill their brothers to protect democracy.
for the white capitalists and the racists, but they're out of line when they start demanding to be respected as human beings. Now, things have been standing on their heads. The young people are standing on their feet these days, because the young people represent the future. They're going to make the future. And contrary to all the old fossils and the critics, I say the future's in good hands, because the young people today are not about to take the crap that the older generation took. It's out. They're a now generation, and they're going to have it now. And this is what had better be learned by the power structure in this country. We look at the young people. There you'll find black student unions, some kind of Afro-American group, presenting all kinds of cultural programs, discussions on a variety of subjects, including black leaders and black history, African history. Now, even getting involved in discussing struggles of aggression against their brothers in Asia, Latin America, because they are beginning to learn that the way things are in this world, that the power is in the hands of the white capitalists. Yet the majority of the world is non-white, and that the majority of the non-white people are not free. And this is what has to be changed. This is what the whole struggle, this is what the whole revolutionary struggle is all about. People wanting to decide their own destiny. And that's what the black people are doing here. It's just, and I say it's long overdue. It's beginning to have its repercussion among the young people on the campuses. It's beginning to have repercussions within the black community. And it's beginning to carry over into the union movement. And of course, the labor fakers are upset about it. You know, the Italians can get together, the Irish can get together, it's all right. The Jewish people can get together, fine. Everybody can get together, you know, and it's all right. Until blacks get together, it's all wrong. Automatically wrong because blacks get together. I say it's right. And it's going to happen whether people like it or not, because that's the way it is. That's the time of the day. Because black people recognize that they must get together. Black people are beginning to recognize that it doesn't matter whether you are a socialist, a Democrat, a Republican, a Catholic, a Methodist, a Baptist, an atheist. If you're black, you're a blood brother to your black brother. That you were black long before you were any of those other things. And that black people must get together. They must learn from their enemy. I think it's common, should be common knowledge if it isn't. No administration in Washington is harmonious. They don't all agree. They got all kind of disagreements. But what they do, they go behind closed doors. They have their arguments. But they resolve them behind closed doors. But what they present to the public is a united front. Because no matter what kind of hassle they have, somebody come in and say, well, hey, look, man, it's us or them. Now, we're going to argue among ourselves. They're going to take what we got, and we don't want that, so let's get together and come on out here and stick together. And that's what they do. This is what black people got to learn. This is what they are learning. Because at the heart of the problem is the question of freedom and equality. And I don't care how it's characterized. Now, if you're for integration, and that's more of a term than anything else, because it's never been defined. Now, what I mean by never being defined is this. You know, if you say you are for this, then somewhere along the lines you can say, well, we've gone this far. We haven't got to here, but at least we're here. Now, integration, that term has to be clarified. Because within the integration struggle, it's two concepts. That is, the concept held by the leaders of the integration movement and the masses who are part of that movement. Now, when these leaders are talking about integration, they are talking about not about the masses of people, they're talking about themselves. They're talking about their being integrated into the power structure in this country. So that if one more makes it, they all feel what I might be next. They see progress taking place. But now, nothing's changed with the masses of black people. You know, one more's got a job, but hell, that haven't changed enough. Now, if you define it, you're saying our integration is this. One, blacks are 12 or 13% of the total population. Blacks are integrated when and if 13% of everything in this country is black. Now, you know that'll never happen. But that would be integration. But not integration as these leaders are projecting it. But that would be integration. Now, if it was defined in that fashion, the minute that one individual got something, everybody would say, so he got a job, so what? What about not just him, let's make it 13% of that instead of 12 or instead of one individual. The point is to get around this window dressing bit. Like when there's a big argument about discrimination, they put up a window dressing. You know, there's one. This solves everything. They got theirs. They got theirs, and that's it. The point is, integration cannot be achieved under this capitalist system. Because to integrate implies equality, and there isn't any. There isn't any because this system is not constructed for black people to be free. So any attempt to challenge this concept, or any attempt to struggle for freedom, is minimal because it cannot be achieved under this capitalist system. Similarly, we think the concept of separation has been projected. The reason behind it, of course, is since over the years, since black people have been trying to integrate into this society and they have not achieved their freedom, since the white power structure in this country do not want to grant and will not grant freedom to black people. Not that anybody can grant another people their freedom. They got to take it. That they seek to move away, to pull away, to separate. Now, as I say, what impels desire for separation is the question of freedom, that it can't be achieved under this system. But I think it's necessary to be aware that this country don't give anybody anything. Never has and never will. If they seek to give you something, you better examine it. Because there's some strings tied to it somewhere. They didn't give the South back to the slave owners until the slave owners agreed to support them in their ventures abroad. They didn't get it back until they had committed themselves to support this nation in its ventures into other lands. And that's true today. The South, that is the so-called Dixiecrats, may hassle and argue about civil rights. They don't want to pass this, they don't want to pass that. But they don't disagree when it comes to going into Vietnam, trying to start an invasion of Cuba, or trying to start counter-revolutions in Latin America. They don't disagree on that. So that when the question is posed about separation, the question is always posed, separation to go where? Who controls where you're going? And what the rulers of this country has demonstrated is that they are going to police the world and strive to keep every country who is striving to decide their own destiny, they're going to prevent it with armed force. So that the key to freedom, not only in this country, but throughout the world, is the bringing down of this capitalist system in this country. Because they are the world police. So that only by changing this system can blacks even separate in peace. Because to separate with the idea that this country is going to let anybody alone, I think would be a serious illusion to have. There's Cuba to demonstrate what I mean, and there's Vietnam. So that obstacle in the way of black people getting their freedom is the same obstacle that stands in the way of non-whites getting their freedom throughout the world. That is, the white capitalist rulers in this country. And this is what has to be changed. This system has to be changed. Inside out, upside down, everything, lock, stock, and barrel. And start all over again. Because the rulers of this country have made up their mind that if they can't rule this land, they'll destroy it. And they will, unless the power is taken away from them. And this must be in the minds of black people because they represent that section, the majority of the world, who are conducting a struggle in the guts of the monster. Now, when we speak of black people getting their freedom, we talk about black people getting together, we automatically run into criticisms and accusations. Everybody can get together and is looked upon as people exercising their right of self-determination. Blacks do it, it's racism in reverse. Somebody went, some so-called revolutionary, namely the Communist Party, called it black fascism. Now, it only proves that the Communist Party is not revolutionary and don't understand what's happening. But to say that it's black fascism is to imply that blacks are going to take over this country for capitalism. And that's got about as much chance of happening as a snowball has for survival in so-called hell. It's not the case at all. They say it's racism in reverse. They call it black racism. Is it racism? I say, no, it isn't. Racism has been practiced against black people for 400 years. The minute that they seek to organize and to defend themselves against racism, they in turn are called racist. Racism is not just a term. Racism exists in crude forms in the South because they use the law, the courts, the state police to make racism a reality. They have the power to make it a reality. They have the power to prosecute blacks for being black. And that's what the real crime is. There's nothing really more than that. Now, what power at this point do blacks have? What laws do they have to arrest or put in jail white people for being white? They don't have any. We're talking here about having the power to affect the life or the livelihood of people. That this is being carried out in a racist fashion. This is racism. A system which prevents black people from exercising the same rights as other citizens. This is racism. So for exercising their rights as citizens, they are called racist, and they're not. They said they're automatically anti-white. No, they're not that either. They're pro-black. But even if they were anti-white, you know, you look at history, there's a lot of reasons for that, too. So for 400 years, black people have been treated as subhuman. Now, all of a sudden, they've got to prove to whites that they are not racist. And that's a little one-sided, I think. And that's not about to happen either. The fact is that it's not racism in reverse. It's a way of stopping racism. It's a way of preventing the spreading of racism. Because the power structure in this country knows that if the black people would get together from coast to coast in this land, organized, all putting forth the same demand in every single city, town at the same time, would begin to crumble this system to the ground. They've been able to maintain this white supremacist ideology by excluding blacks from the history of this country, in the teachings of the history of this country. This compels the whites to feel that they're superior, and it encourages blacks to think that they're inferior. It causes many whites to feel that black people are demanding something that they're not entitled to. Therefore, they ought not to do it. Well, they better do a little learning. Because black people are demanding what is rightfully theirs, and it's long overdue. As I mentioned earlier, the impact of black nationalism is spreading into the union movement. I don't know how many of you have been reading about what's been happening in Detroit with Drum and Frum and the League for Revolutionary Black Workers. Now, here's a case in point. Now, in theory, the union movement is organized to raise the level of working people, to defend their rights, to better their conditions, to defend their rights on the job. But they are not. They have not done this. They have not done this to such an extent that it is necessary for black people to do it for themselves. And this is what these formations in the United Automobile Workers are doing. They're demanding better working conditions, more wages, and more safety on the jobs. As a result of poor safety conditions, a black worker was killed. So they organized. And the minute they organized, the company, the union bosses, and the police opposed them. And Ruther, who says he's a liberal, he probably is in his mind, opposed them on the basis that, for the same reason that you read, may have read about in the Times, racism in reverse, that these blacks, by organizing, are going to disrupt the black-white unity of the labor movement. This is not the case either. Because had Ruther and the other bureaucrats been doing their jobs as union officials and defending the rights of their membership, it would not be necessary for blacks to organize to do what the union has come into existence supposedly to do. But then what really is posed is the very fundamental question of whether you are for maintaining this capitalist system or whether you're against it. Or whether you are for the maintenance of racism in this country or whether you're against it. That's where the fundamental line is drawn. And this is a question that's being posed by the black youth on the campuses, and this is what is being posed by the black workers in the shops. And you'll find the same lineup. The white capitalist rulers, the Democrats, the Republicans, every labor faker and the Uncle Tom all lined up on one side with the black workers on the other. Because that's where the basic lineup is. Anybody who benefits from racism, anyone who benefits from capitalism, anyone who's on the pie is for the maintenance of this racist capitalist system. Anyone who are the victims of it, of course, are opposed to it. And this is the reality. So that the whole idea of black people coming into their own is beginning to shake up this power structure. Because black people are learning that nobody is going to give them their freedom. They've got to take it for themselves. And this is what they're in the process of doing. Now, this is not going to be an easy job. It's not going to be easy because of the 400 years of brainwashing that's been perpetrated upon all the people, but particularly the black people in this country, which has to be overcome, which has to be changed. But this is beginning to take place. We see it in the youth. We see it in the unions. And we're beginning to see it now among black GIs in Vietnam, as well as black GIs in many barracks throughout this country, where more and more black people realize there is no democracy in this country. That what they're really fighting for in Vietnam, Korea, or any place else is to defend the right of white capitalism to maintain racism and white supremacy in this land. And this is what has to be changed. And everyone who is supporters of and defenders of capitalism are against the black struggle. Those who benefit from it, which are the poor people, are for it. But there is no freedom short of changing the system. There are many things that have to be done for black people to get their freedom in this country. One of the things they're going to have to do is to realize that you got to draw the line. The Democratic and Republican parties are supporters of capitalism. There is no friend of blacks in the Democratic or Republican Party. There never has been and there never will be. Just as any black who is a candidate for the Democratic and Republican Party is not a defender of the black struggle, because the machine picks the man. It's like you work for a boss. As long as you do what he tells you to do, he will pay you. When you stop doing it, he have no further use for you. So that no Negro who is a part of the Democratic or Republican Party can support the struggle of black people. Because his job is to uphold the capitalist system. And like everything else, when things begin to fail in this society, they always turn to the blacks. This has been the case in almost anything you can name. You take in a fight racket. When it went dead, you had Joe Louis who revived it. You take the majority of the sports today, basketball, blacks have revived it. Baseball, blacks have revived it. And in Vietnam, who's doing the fighting? What's the largest percentage of people there who are doing the fighting? It's the blacks. And this is what has to be changed. They are fighting for a democracy and for a so-called freedom which they themselves cannot enjoy because they are black. And young people are beginning to change this. And this is what is at the heart of the struggle. It's the question of freedom, the question of justice, the question of equality. This is at the heart of it. Now, for all of those who are alarmed by it, blacks getting together, some who are concerned about black-white unity, any people to get their freedom have got to organize among themselves. It's not that they're anti-white, it's just that black people got to get together, discuss what they have to do to get their freedom. And it is necessary to have some black unity before any serious black-white unity is going to take place. Because black-white unity down through the years have meant very little to black people in this country. Yes, it has meant one thing. It has meant that their struggle and their demands are subordinated to everything else. And this is what has to be changed.